You know how sometimes you were looking for something in your dresser drawer and you come across an old t-shirt you forgot you had and you think, if this still fits, and to be truthful, the chances of that happening to me are pretty slim, but if this still fits, why not wear it again? Well, I was going through the old t-shirt drawer of the Vet Podcast the other day and I came across an old recording I made with George Sophronides. Now, George is from Orovet, an Australian animal genetics company, and it was entitled CSI Animal Forensics. It piqued my interest because I see CSI is being re-released. I had a listen to it and thought, this recording still fits, the information is still relevant, let's wear it again. So, in this episode of the Vet Podcast, we change crime scene investigation to canine scene investigation and re-release CSI, the Animal Forensics episode.
Are you a veterinarian dreaming about working down under in New Zealand? If so, I'd love to help you make that dream come true. Hi, I'm Julie South of VetStaff. VetStaff is New Zealand's only recruitment agency specialising in the Kiwi veterinary sector. We can help you find your dream job down under, from short-term locum assignments through to permanent employment and residency. Because we know God's own Aotearoa New Zealand like the back of our hands, we can match your career aspirations with a clinic that'll suit you best. Whether you're planning to work here for a few months or forever. If it's got anything to do with working in a vet clinic in New Zealand, we can help. vetstaff.co.nz.
You are listening to the Vet Podcast, presented by veterinarian Dr. Brian Greger from New Zealand. Join us as we discuss pet health issues from around the world.
We've got George Sophronides from Orovet Genetic Pet Care in Australia with us today, and we are talking animal forensics. To me, forensics is the science stuff that goes on in the lab and TV programs like CSI. I guess what you're basically looking at, the clue being genetic pet care in the name, is the DNA.
That's right, you know, CSI, I like to call it canine scene investigation, Brian, and yeah, it's really just using forensic procedures to identify attacks on companion animals, livestock, and also humans.
So where do you get the DNA from?
Yeah, it can come from pretty much anywhere from hair samples to saliva samples that are on around a puncture mark, or it can come from matted hair on a cat or an alpaca or sheep, and even feces can provide us with DNA material to find a culprit. So it ranges from, you know, your blood right down to your feces. And what tends to happen, Brian, is that as you move from feces to blood, the quality and the quantity of DNA increases. So when you move into those other samples such as feces and matted hair, you're going to get less DNA and the quality is going to be not as great as your blood sample.
What kind of things are you using the DNA samples for? I mean, if you go back to CSI, they're using the DNA to find the bad guy who killed the model.
Look, sometimes we may we wanted to identify whether it's what particular species of animal it is, and or other cases we're trying to identify whether the dog a dog has attacked it, and then trying to work that back to a reference sample. So we may have a bit of cat hair that's matted up. Sometimes we want to identify that was if it was more than one dog that caused the attack. And we've done cases where we've been able to identify two dogs in an attack. Where sometimes the system can break down is you may be able to source a bit of DNA from the sample, but then it's about having a reference sample to be able to put that back to, and that's where you need the actual culprit at the time to refer it back to. So we get a particular DNA profile which is unique to a particular animal. We then need to find out who the culprit was. And in a lot of livestock cases, they can be difficult, Brian, because, you know, there's a sheep's been attacked and there's no dog in sight. So we're able to take a sample off the sheep, but there's nothing to reference it back to.
So another scenario that's just come to mind, George, going back to the whodunit programs. The bad man kills the model. At the crime scene, they find cat hair. They know that the bad man owns a cat. They take DNA from the cat hair that is at the crime scene, go back to match that to the DNA sample of the bad guy's cat. You got a match. got your man.
Exactly. So as long as there's a follicle on the hair, then you've got to take it back. Look, we get one of my most interesting ones. I get a number of inquiries from people that live in body corporates who there's a dog that's defecating on the front lawn and they want to know whose dog it is. So in that case, what I suggest to them is that you need to take a DNA swab sample from all the dogs that live in that in those apartments. So that acts as your database. And then anytime there's any feces, you simply collect that, send that in. We extract DNA from that feces and then run it against the database to find the culprit.
How about, you know, some of this dodgy meat that's around? Is this horse meat, water buffalo meat, or prime Angus?
Well, we've actually had an interesting one from a guy who has his steer or his cow that he takes to the abattoir, and he wants to make sure the meat that he gets back is the cow that he took to initially get slaughtered. And because he questioned it the year before, so he collects a blood sample from the cow before it goes off to the slaughter yard, and then he sends us in some meat that he gets back from the abattoir, and lo and behold, it was different. So it didn't match up. So in that case, he just wanted to verify that the cow that he's given to the abattoir, which is the one that he's grown and nurtured, and is the one that he sent, and it wasn't. So it didn't match up. We also get issues where there's people that are depositing, you know, blood down stormwater, and you know, government agencies want to find these people, want to first verify that in the stormwater is actual cattle blood, and we've verified that for them. So, you know, it has a number of and we do a lot of species identification where sometimes, you know, there may be a syringe left in some either a vet surgery or a welfare organisation or a pound, and they just want to identify whether it's human blood or animal blood, and we can identify that as well.
So I suppose along the same track then, George, there's a blood splatter on the front of a car. Did the car hit a kangaroo or did the car hit a human?
Yeah, and I get some funny ones where they go, look, there's some blood on the fence paling. Can I bring the fence paling in? And what we do is we have this fantastic little pack, and inside it has this saline which allows you to take a wet swab procedure. So it allows you to drop some sterile saline onto your cotton swab, which acts then as a sponge to remove the blood from the fence paling. So instead of having to send in the whole fence paling, or if there's any blood on a car, the whole car, you simply transfer it off yourself using the consumables that are in this kit that we've developed, and allows you to be able to take samples at a crime scene.
The Vet Podcast has no sponsorship, but as is the way of the world, it still costs money to produce, what with the hosting site, interviewing platforms, and software subscriptions, not to mention the recording equipment required. So if you enjoy the podcasts, why not show it in a small way and buy me a coffee? If you are so inclined, go to buymeacoffee.com/vetpodcasts or to our social media bio site. Now back to the podcast. Councils and regional authorities here in New Zealand, in Australia too, correct me if I'm wrong, and a lot of places around the world keep registers of menacing or dangerous dogs. One of the things that would be quite handy, I would imagine, would to actually have a DNA profile of those dogs attached to the register. Is that happening?
No. Well, it's, again, something I've floated to councils and gets a lot of interest. But unfortunately, it's hard for councils to make this mandatory to get all dangerous dogs on a database. I have the easiest way to manage dangerous dogs is to make sure that we have a DNA profile on a database. That way, if there's any incident, you don't have to worry about a reference sample. You've got them all on a database. If someone's breeding these dangerous dogs, we can also trace and see whether all these particular dogs are being bred by one individual through analysing the pedigrees. It has a lot of advantages, but it's, again, how do we get councils make that law? How do we make it compulsory to have these people submit a DNA profile? I think it's quite simple because they're on a dangerous dog register, and you simply take the swab at the time that they register. It's on a database, and you allow this database to be accessed by as many councils as you can. Again, very positive, but again, how do we enforce that? I just need a council to put their hand up and say we'll be the first, and I'm still waiting though, Brian.
I'm guessing that another example that you could be using DNA testing for would be in ownership disputes. You've got a dog which isn't microchipped. Now, granted, most dogs these days are microchipped, but the dog's not microchipped. It's my dog. No, it's my dog. Is it possible for the original or the supposed original owner of the dog to get DNA taken from something that he's got of the dogs, like a brush or something, compare it with the DNA in the dog in question and prove ownership?
Correct. And we've done that for a case which I highlight and I talk about, which was a gentleman who rang us up. And this gentleman rang me that his three-month-old Rottweiler he'd seen 18 months later. Now, I argued, you know, a Rottweiler at 3 months and they all look the same. So I said to him, okay, for us to be able to identify it, do you have anything left over at home from the dog originally? Like, did you brush your dog with a brush and have any hair? No, I got rid of that. Do you have a toy that it played with? No, but he goes, I do have its lead that it carried in its mouth. Now, this was 18 months later. He sends us in the lead. We perform a wet dry swab procedure, remove cells off the lead where we could see like a little stain from where it had in its mouth, and got a DNA profile from that. So again, that was then being able to use. Now, I never heard back from the guy because I doubt whether it was his dog. It was maybe just an emotion. But it shows you that all we need is something that the dog, you know, either a brush which has got hair follicles or something that it carried in its mouth. It doesn't matter if it was a week old or 18 months old. We use that as a profile because a DNA profile is unique. It is exactly like a microchip number. It is a set of unique numbers that belong to that dog that you can then trace back to family. So then it's a matter of having something at home that the dog's that has a DNA follicle on it, whether it's hair, whether it's something carried, that we can then refer back to the animal to prove that it was your dog. So, yes, you're right, we can, and we have used it.
The Vet Podcast has followers and listeners throughout the world. If people have a look at your website, which is orivet.com, O-R-I-V-E-T.com, and have some tests there which they wish you to do, are there any issues in them sending samples to you in Australia?
No, no problem. We have an AQUIS permit, a quarantine permit that is international and allows samples to come through from saliva to semen to hair. It is a problem in some more exotic species such as your birds and your reptiles, but for all dogs, no problem. For either semen, hair or blood. So we have that permit on our website and it's available. As long as you cite that number on the parcel that you send in, then it gets through quarantine.
Thanks, George.
Thanks for your time, Brian.
As I said at the start of the podcast, this is an interview that I did with George a few years ago now. If you're interested in this sort of stuff, Orivet is a company which offers a range of genetic services to breeders and to vets, and it includes things like genetic diseases, coat colours, traits, parentage confirmation, forensics, and a lot more. So if you are interested in any of these services, get onto their website, orivet.com, O-R-I-V-E-T.com. George doesn't know it yet, but hopefully I'm going to arrange a catch-up with him again, and we'll have a talk about some of these services in a little bit more detail. Until next time, take care, everybody. And that's it for another episode of the Vet Podcast. All of our links are in one place at beacons.ai/vetpodcast. That is beacons.ai/vetpodcast. And while you're there, don't forget to buy us a coffee. On behalf of me, Brian Greger, and everybody else involved in the making of this podcast, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again soon.